I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local, and the show is your connection to local music and more. My guest today is Melissa Murley, who is a longtime writer for the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. She's been there since 1990, and the arts are her beat for the most part now, and we'll hear some about her reporter's life, and here's some of her musical selections that she also brought in today. And I've been rather looking forward to this for a while. So Melissa has interviewed me before. I get to interview her now, so that'll be fun. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was an arrangement of an English folk tune called Cherry Ripe, and the arrangement made by Frank Bridge, a performance by the English String Orchestra, the conductor William Boughton. And the station is WYLL, 90.9 FM and HD Urbana. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. We've got some varied music coming up, all of which has been chosen by my guest today, who is Melissa Murley, who is arts and entertainment writer for the News Gazette. Is it correct to say the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette?
We really don't go by that, just the News Gazette.
The News Gazette.
There was a joke. We were calling it the Champaign-Urbana Danville Rantoul, et cetera, News Gazette when we expanded.
But some of those others do have papers. Rantoul doesn't. Does Rantoul have a paper?
Yeah, they do. The Rantoul Press. I believe we own that now.
Well, that's one way to take care of it, isn't it? Well, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for asking me.
Oh, well, as I said, I've been looking forward to it because usually in connection with the Prairie Ensemble, which some listeners may know I conduct, you'll have interviewed me for season concerts or season announcements and concerts and so on. And then so I thought, well, this would be fun to have you on because you cover so many aspects of the arts and entertainment. What's your own background that led you to, well, that led you to Champaign in the first place, and then that led you to end up being the arts writer or an arts writer?
Mainly I volunteered for the features department and for being an arts writer. And as I grew up in a small town, I always wanted to be an artist, a visual artist, and I also wanted to be a rock star, so I learned to play the guitar when I was 13, but I never got very good at it. And then I didn't have much of a portfolio to show when I went to the U of I, so I majored in psychology. Then I started...
You were looking for a rock star portfolio, is what you wanted?
Yeah. No, for the arts,
right.
Yeah. And so then toward the end, I was starting to take and develop my black and white photographs with the help of a family friend, and I really liked that, so I started working at the Daily Illini as a photographer. I took the advanced photojournalism class at the U of I in 6 weeks of basic news writing, and then I was the first female photographer hired at the Commercial News in Danville. And I did that for a year, then I went into the features department and did everything: writing, headline writing, layout of pages. And that's where I learned a lot about writing from Jean Byram, who was the features editor at the time, and she was a really good writer. She used to win an award every year, an award or two, state award. And then I did hard news. I covered the courts, the government, everything, schools. Worked a little bit in Chillicothe, Ohio, came back to the Danville area. Then I got hired by the News Gazette in 90 to help them open the Vermilion County Bureau. Then in 93, I moved over here and I did schools K through 12. And then every so often, newspapers do beat rearrangements, and I volunteered for features because that's what I really liked in the arts. And so then I got moved to the features department, and I volunteered to do an art column every Sunday. And so I really like it the best because that's where my personal interests lie, the arts.
What constitutes a feature?
Oh, it's a little less hard news, government-oriented, and more about people and their lives. And it can be news-related. So, you know, there are news features and then kind of human interest features. And so
I imagine that's sort of a gray area. Where does the line get drawn between what constitutes news?
Right.
And I imagine that depends a little bit on what's the medium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's the newspaper, there's one kind of news. If it's, I guess if you have a program like Entertainment Tonight, that's already defining what that news is going to be. But CNN, you know, for example, sometimes they put stuff up and you mm-hmm. wonder,
yeah, entertainment
is that
has
really
become
news?
Hard news.
Yeah, exactly.
Entertainment has really become hard news.
Well, so, which actually raises a question in my mind. You said to me in an email the other day that there's less room currently than there has been in sometimes in the past for arts and entertainment in mm-hmm. the News Gazette.
For all the stories, because we shrunk in size sort of to save money. So we don't have as much. A lot of newspapers have done that. They've either shrunk the size of their papers and the number, and usually have decreased the number of pages too.
So you said all the stories, but in particular arts and entertainment or... just generally, there's
generally,
less room for everything.
Generally, there's a little less room for everything.
But what I was thinking is it does seem that, I mean, it is true that in many, even big city papers, classical music especially gets less and less coverage, mm-hmm. and entertainment in general. But yet then you have the television where entertainment has become news.
It's sort of a dichotomy, isn't it?
Yeah, no. What sense does that make? Any idea what the...
I don't know.
What's the difference with the print medium?
I think the print medium is trying to reach the broader mainstream audience, probably, too. Well, so does TV. So I don't know. I don't know why. I know the Chicago Tribune dropped their Alan Artner, their longtime art critic,
entirely
a few months ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it seems like
most newspapers,
a big mystery.
Most of the managers of newspapers are really news and sports-oriented, I would say, rather than arts-oriented.
And so it's just their prejudice, you think?
Probably.
And just
kind of a tradition. I mean, the arts and entertainment's always been, they've always been in the back of the newspaper rather than the front.
Yeah, well, that is true. I mean, does that ever affect your own psyche as a worker at the paper that you're, you know, mm-hmm. you're the one who's in the back all the time?
No, because I enjoy what I'm covering. And I know there are a lot of people who enjoy reading that more than they enjoy reading the hard news.
And so you've got your fan base,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is good. Give us a kind of an overview, if you can give an overview, of what happens in a typical Melissa Merle week.
A week.
Mm. Talk work-related here. You don't have to go into the whole rest.
Well, I can tell you today I went in and immediately wrote a story that I think is going to run this Wednesday on the Big Neighborhood Supper. It was an event that a young woman put on in Urbana, and it was participatory, and she viewed it as like a public art or participatory art piece where people came to her home around 4 p.m. and brought a lot of food, most of it local, and then helped prepare the meal. And people brought dinner plates, and they built a couple of the dinner tables, and they made placemats from photographs and put up a banner. And so she viewed it as an art piece. So I wrote about that. And then a lot of times I do rewrites if I'm not writing on a story. And then now they push our deadlines up, so I'll be working to finish, like early in the week, I'll finish an E3 cover story or a story that might go inside. We put a lot of theater stories in that, advances on local theater. And the E3 is like the weekly entertainment guide, and that comes out every Thursday. And then as Wednesday and Thursday roll along, I have to finish my Sunday entertainment stories or Sunday feature stories. And I might do from 2 to 4 or 5 for the weekend. It just depends on if anybody else has written anything. We're starting to publish a lot of stories by correspondents in outlying towns about their arts events, too. So that's it, you know. Sometimes I'll go to an art event in the evening, just especially when school starts, then there are a lot more. So it's just a lot of writing, going out and interviewing people. Last week, I interviewed Nathan and Julie Gunn, and then I went to their home and met their kids and talked to them for a little while. We want to do a story about them as a family rather than his career, which we've already covered. So it just varies. And you know, I might interview people by telephone. Like I interviewed Kathy Mattea a couple of weeks ago to advance her concert. And then I might, if they're here, I go out and meet them. And so it's a lot of interviewing, either in person or by telephone, and then sitting at my desk and writing.
And you mentioned Nathan and Julie Gunn. Nathan Gunn is now a well-known opera singer who lives here in town, and Julie is on the piano.
Accompanying.
I'm not supposed to say accompanying. Oh. I was told.
Oh, really?
It was by her, but it was by a
They have another word for it.
Collaborator was what the Rohan De Silva, who performed with the Prairie Ensemble a couple years ago, I think. That was the term he used.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they call it accompanying in the School of Music. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the major.
I think they still do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But in any event, she's a professor of that there and a wonderful pianist, and they've got these 5 kids. So you find out about these things by digging around, or people tell you about them, or like that supper thing. How'd you find out about that?
Maggie Taylor, the young woman who organized it, emailed me. She wanted me to review it for the News Gazette. I had never really met her before. And so I said, sure. And, yeah, people tell you. I read about things. I hear about things. We get news releases at work.
And
just
how much,
whatever.
How much say do you have into what actually gets covered? I mean, so what, you said she asked and you said sure, but
I have to ask an
that.
Editor. Yeah. And she said fine. Becky Mabry, our editor. Yeah.
And do you need powers of persuasion, or if just the fact that you, in your judgment, wanted to cover it, does that usually carry enough weight to
usually
for somebody
usually
for the
yeah.
editors?
Usually, yeah. That's one thing I've always liked about working at a newspaper. You have a lot of freedom to do stories on things that you're interested in, because editors always have to fill space, so they appreciate having stories suggested. And then Becky has a vision, so she has been suggesting a lot of stories too, like the Prairie Dogs, and what else did she suggest? And she also is veering me toward doing more in-depth articles on artists, like Michael Hoag. He had a show at Parkland Art Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and he's also a therapist. So
more in-depth articles as opposed to
more on the surface stuff. Like, the story I wrote on him might have been 50 column inches, close to, and usually I'll do 25. And it's more about how they live and what they think and feel, stuff like that.
So even more human interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah, more human interest. She likes the personal. Becky does.
That seems like a nice a change, mm-hmm. actually, from what we were talking about earlier, where mm-hmm. you're getting more space for something like mm-hmm. that you would think would be not quite news. It's an interesting mix, and I imagine you've worked for a number of different features editors, and they all have their different vision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
Becky, I think, really knows the community well. She grew up around here. She lives out near St. Joe.
That's got to be helpful, I imagine.
She really, and I think she's come up with a lot of good features. Like, we do a celebrity Q&A now on Sundays, and then I came up with the idea for a studio visit, where I go to an artist's studio and we take a picture of him or her there and we talk to them about their art in a Q&A format, and we keep that short so we can run that every week because there are just so many artists out there. And I've expanded it to musicians too, and so we'll probably do lots of different kinds of artists in that. And so that'll give a taste to the community of different artists instead of doing a really long story on an artist or a 25-inch story on an artist. We do an 18-inch question and answer format, and it's easy for people to read, and it shows people how many artists there are out there.
Sure, it gives you a chance to cover more of mm-hmm. them and people mm-hmm. to digest it quickly.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think we would want to do a long article every week on an artist. So here you have a nice short one. You can get more artists in that way.
Do you have your own favorite kinds of music?
I like everything but heavy metal and contemporary country. And I like jazz, especially live jazz, classical, world music. Those are probably my favorite.
So you brought along several selections. And I think the first one we're going to start with is a jazz mm-hmm. jazz one, which was kind of interesting when you showed it to me, because I thought, hey, these guys were actually on this show. Jim Pugh, trombonist who was on faculty at the University of Illinois School of Music in their growing jazz program, and this other trombonist, Eijiro Nakagawa, together they're a group called, they just call themselves E&J.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a backup band, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. How did you get interested in them?
Oh, I've interviewed Jim Pugh, and I've gone to his concerts at the Iron Post, and I think he's fabulous, great trombonist, and he gave me a few of his CDs, and I really like this one in particular. What's it called? The Lion and the...
Legend and Lion.
The Legend and Lion. And the young Japanese trombonist, they met. I think somebody told him that he should study with Jim Pugh, and when Jim Pugh heard him, he was like, no, we'll play together, because he was so good.
Yeah, what do you have to learn from me?
And their concerts at the Iron Post are usually packed, and they are great. They're really he's really good. He's one of the top trombonists ever.
Jim is the legend.
Is the legend.
And Eijiro is the young lion, as they say. Mm-hmm. I've always been curious about that term. And the Iron Post is a club in downtown Urbana mm-hmm. that hosts a lot of jazz.
Mm-hmm. I go there a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about some of the places you go as we continue this conversation with Melissa Murley here on Live and Local. This is a tune called Chelsea Bridge, from Jim Pugh and Eijiro Nakagawa's disc called E&J, Legend and Lion. Thank you. Chelsea Bridge, performance, a tune by Billy Strayhorn, and a performance here by the group E&J, who are Eijiro Nakagawa and Jim Pugh, both of them trombonists, and their backup band, from a disc called Legend and Lion, a selection here on Live and Local by Melissa Murley, who is my guest today and is arts and entertainment writer for the News Gazette, based in Champaign-Urbana. Programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible with support from Sinfonietta Camera, whose 26th season explores literary and musical themes from opera to Broadway, featuring works from Beethoven to Cole Porter, and opens with a musical homage to William Shakespeare. More information is available at 333-6280. Melissa, when we just before we played that, you mentioned that you go to a lot of concerts at the Iron Post in Urbana, and that's where you've heard these guys a number of times. And I know as somebody who does a show like this and gets to interview many new people who are new to me, I'll get excited about somebody I interview and then sometimes not get to go, often not get to go to the things.
I do that too.
I mean, that's got to be both the frustrating part and the fun part about about your job.
Yeah, I love learning a lot about, I've learned a lot about the arts through interviewing people. That's what I like about it. It's a great way to learn about it.
And what kind of things will stimulate you to actually go out and hear somebody?
Oh, almost anything, you know, whether I like their music or not. If I like their music, then I'm more apt to go. I pooped out on Kathy Mateo. I was going to go, and then I just got too tired by the time 7:30 rolled around on Friday, because I liked her, and I wasn't that familiar with her music. But just knowing the music and or being interested in hearing it, I will go out. I'll go hear it.
Do you sometimes get sufficiently interested in the personality, maybe even more than the music, that is intriguing?
I was really taken by Marissa, the fado singer from Portugal, her personality, but she had a wonderful voice too. So I probably care more about the art than the personality.
And we're probably going to hear her in a little bit, so maybe a little more there later. I ask that because I've found both in talking to people. And you mentioned Kathy Mattea. I didn't know much about her music either, but I so much enjoyed the conversation that I really wanted to.
She seemed very genuine.
Yeah.
And caring. I liked her saying that she, every day she thinks, how can I be of service to others?
I remember reading that in your article, yeah. Yeah, she seemed like a very down-to-earth person, which is an easy thing to say, but she also seemed to be dedicated to things other than her commercial art, especially, you know, she's sort of entering a later phase of her career, it seems like.
She's returning to roots music after having been in contemporary country.
Yeah. Well, she said, I remember she referred to, you know, she's been in commercial music, which is a term that sort of intrigues me. You know, what constitutes commercial music as opposed to what? Legitimate music? I'm not sure what that means. It's like, where's the line between news and entertainment? Might be sort of a similar distinction. I don't know. I interviewed Tommy Emmanuel, the guitarist.
Oh, yeah.
Interviewed him too, I think.
He's really nice and friendly.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
Yeah, he was great.
In fact, after I talked with Kathy Mattea, having also talked with him, I said to somebody here, I'm going to quit talking to classical musicians. I'm going to talk to these country singers because, you know, I don't know. They just, at least the ones I've talked to, seem to be very easy to talk with, which is, that helps make a great interview. I mean, you can be a decent interviewer, but it sure helps when you're a good interviewee.
Definitely.
I mean, what makes a good interviewee from your end?
Somebody who's open and honest.
Do you have trouble getting people to be open and honest, or do you have techniques that you use to try to get people to do that?
I just try to, like, have a conversation instead of writing down questions. If I'm really nervous, I'll jot down a few questions if it's somebody, like, really famous. But if you just kind of, if you're casual, then it seems to lead to more and more good information.
So you don't necessarily have an agenda going into an interview with
somebody? No, I never do.
You just have a little information from
them? A little information, yeah. Try to read about them and listen to some of their music or whatever, and then go.
So you and I seem to take a similar approach, I think. Mm-hmm. I was interested to read that article on Kathy Mattea because I assumed you had similar information to what I had, and yet your article went a very different direction than our conversation went. And, you know, they were both really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed talking with her. I hope listeners enjoyed hearing it. And then I enjoyed reading your article. And I learned a lot of stuff that I hadn't known from either reading or talking to her.
That's good. I hope to add some, you know, put some new information out there.
Yeah.
Instead of the same old.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you avoid sometimes doing the same old, particularly if it is somebody that's well known?
Oh, I don't know. I just hope I ask a question that will prompt something different to pop up or unique. Michael Tilson Thomas?
Yeah, conductor, San Francisco Symphony.
I didn't feel like my conversation with him went very well, but I got a decent story out of it. You know, and I only talked to him for 10 or 15 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. Some people, a few are going to be like, you just can't get anything out of them. I talked to a novelist who he used to teach at SIU. Oh, I can't remember his name. Kent something. A really good writer. His prose is kind of spare. You could not get anything out of him. And then later I talked to somebody who had known him, and they said that's just the way he is. When he goes to book signings, he's not very talkative either. So you're lucky. I think people are just, you know, are so different. And when you hit the jackpot when they're honest and open like Kathy Mattea, and when they're not, it's going to be a little bit more of a boring story. But I've been able to get decent things out of most people.
Well, I think it helps if you as an interviewer
are interested too, if you're interested.
Well, are interested and are open and honest yourself. You brought along a selection by a composer that you said whose music you've really gotten to like a lot. His name's Arvo Pärt from Estonia. What appeals to you about his music? And we're going to hear an example of it here in a minute.
I guess because he kind of mixes in European jazz with European American postmodern classical music. I always thought that I sort of didn't like new music, you know, but he's still alive. So, and this piece that we'll play was written in 92. And it just seems sort of simple and complex. And I once read that he writes music to kind of evoke the northern hemisphere, the atmosphere of the northern hemisphere, or bells ringing, or I don't know. I just like it. And in this piece, Keith Jarrett is playing piano, so I really like it. And I found this CD at a rummage sale in Urbana. So I felt like, hey, yay.
So you picked it up because you'd heard his music?
I'd heard his music, maybe on WLL. I'm not sure where I first heard it, but I really liked it. So when I saw that CD, I grabbed it.
This is a piece that exists in a number of different arrangements for a different combination of instruments. This is one for violin and piano. You mentioned Keith Jarrett, the pianist. Gidon Kremer is the violinist. We'll hear part of it. Otherwise, it'll take up half the rest of our time
It's pretty long. What is it, 7 or 11 minutes?
About 11 minutes. We'll hear part of it because the listeners will certainly get the idea. But if you have a moment to step back from whatever it is you're doing, if you're in your workday, just take a few minutes because it's the kind of music that
you have to kind of listen to it, and I think it starts out quiet too.
Yeah,
real quiet,
and pretty much stays that way.
Mm-hmm.
Most of his music, I think, is best experienced if you can be still.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
If you have a moment, try it. It's called Fratres, which means brothers, and I believe you're supposed to have a couple of different images. One of which is of a group of monks, brothers of that sort, in procession. Gidon Kremer, violin, with Keith Jarrett, piano. Arvo Pärt's music, a selection made by Melissa Murley here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. You're getting a little bit of an idea of one of the versions of the piece called Fratres by Arvo Pärt. We've heard about half the piece. Performance here by violinist Gidon Kramer and pianist Keith Jarrett on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We want to move on to some of Melissa Merle's other selections on the show today. I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks for joining us. I also want to give you an idea of some other performances you can go hear over the next couple of days. This is our calendar moment. The Decatur Municipal Band is performing tonight, a free concert at 7 o'clock at Central Park in Decatur. Tomorrow, the group Strings Attached, a bluegrass band, is playing at the Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood. That is at 5:30 tomorrow night. And Matt Torino and Ben Smith are performing tomorrow night at the Iron Post in Urbana. That is at 7 o'clock. And as it happens, Matt Torino and his dad, Tom Torino, are going to be on my show tomorrow, performing live by way of introducing their new CD, which has just come out recently. So they'll be on Live and Local tomorrow. On Wednesday, Zoo Improv Comedy is performing at the Iron Post, 8 o'clock Wednesday night. The Peoria Municipal Band is at Glen Oak Park Wednesday night at 7:30. There's the weekly Irish Traditional Music Session at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign. That's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. The CU Folk and Roots Society presents the Hudsons and Richie Taylor String Band at the Canopy Club Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. That is in Urbana. And finally, Donnie Heitler playing solo jazz piano, as he quite regularly does at the Great Impasta, also in Urbana, Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. Send us your calendar items if you're involved with an organization or simply know about it, and we can be sure to put it on our program. Send them to me at willcalendar@illinois.edu. That's W-I-L-L calendar at illinois.edu. Melissa Merle is arts and entertainment writer for the News Gazette, writes a weekly arts beat column, runs every Sunday in the entertainment section. She's my guest today on Live and Local. Do you have any particularly memorable interviews that you've done over the years, any that really stand out as being favorites for one reason or another?
Sonny Rollins. He was great. He was
jazz sax player.
Mm-hmm. I almost thought about bringing in one of his CDs. He was a real gentleman. I really liked him, and he was pretty open and honest. And he must have been interviewed a million times, but he didn't act like he was tired of answering questions. He gave long, thorough answers to everything. I really liked Kathy Mattea. I liked Tommy Emmanuel. I've liked a lot of people I've interviewed. I don't know what other ones would be most memorable.
Did you talk to Sonny Rollins in person or on the phone?
On the phone, before he came to Cranor to perform.
So all three of these were probably on the
phone. Yeah, they're all on the phone. Mm-hmm.
What do you find those frustrating at all, or challenging, or fun, or what, the phone interviews when you don't have somebody face-to-face?
I'm so used to it that they're fun. They can be fun, unless the people are sort of snooty.
Well, it's not always fun to interview snooty people, but hopefully you weed them out before you decide to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you don't always know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you find a preference, if you have one, for interviewing people you know something about or you know not much about? Or I should say that you didn't know much about before you read up on whatever you had to read up about them.
Well, I kind of like interviewing people I don't know a lot about, because then, I don't know, I'm not as bored. And I also like interviewing people who are emerging artists, because like really famous people, a lot of younger journalists got all excited about interviewing really famous people, and it doesn't really matter to me that much anymore. I find that younger artists are sometimes more passionate, excited about what they're doing, and so I like interviewing them just as much. And local artists, too. I like interviewing them.
Well, just because you're famous doesn't mean you're interesting, and just because
you're not
doesn't mean you're not interesting.
Right. But, yeah, I kind of almost prefer non-famous people anymore, or people who are not too famous.
Well, you said earlier on that if they are particularly well-known, I think you you said you might get a little more nervous.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, because because you're trying to think of questions that you have that they maybe haven't been asked before, but that's pretty hard to do.
I think I felt something similar. There's actually was one interview didn't even air, mm-hmm. partly for that reason. Mm-hmm. And I found myself very, very nervous about it in mm-hmm. advance. I mean, we won't go into it because it didn't air. But yeah, you want to come up with a question that nobody else asked. But what's the likelihood of that happening? Mm-hmm. Just about zero.
Right. Yeah, I didn't have a very good interview with Errol Morris by telephone before he came to Eberfest, the documentary filmmaker.
Okay.
But then when he was at Eberfest, he came off as a nice guy. So I don't know. It varies.
Maybe it just depends
kind of mood they are when they pick up the phone.
Well, one of the artists that neither of us got to interview, as it turns out, is our next musical sample. We both tried to get her, and it didn't work out. But you got to go hear her, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. Tell us about her.
It was a great concert. She was Maritza from Portugal, a young fado singer from Portugal. And she's very tall. She's a real diva. To me, she was like a cross of Uma Thurman, Marlene Dietrich, and there was somebody else that I thought she reminded me of. And great voice. And she had on this dramatic long black gown and these long sleeves. And I think they went well over her fingers. And she has platinum short blonde hair. She had really good backup musicians. I think they were two of three of them were Portuguese at least, or all of them. And she created a very intimate atmosphere. I think it was in the Colwell Playhouse. And I had never heard her before. Some of my friends had, but I thought she was fantastic. I was just ready to throw myself at her feet. She was just, oh my God. And it kind of reminded me of Cecilia Bartoli, but only a different, the genre.
Well, now that's kind of
the same kind of diva thing, but Bartoli's a little more friendly. Somebody said of Maritza that she was frightened of her because she did seem sort of kind of dramatic.
But haughty, maybe a little bit?
A tad, but also approachable. And then toward the end, a voice came over the PA, Maritza will be in the lobby to sign autographs, So she was a bit of a diva, but I didn't care. She was so good. And I don't know, I wouldn't want a steady diet of fado, but I really liked this album and I liked her singing. And
what do you know about fado?
Well, it's a Portuguese genre of music, and it's sort of it's about the sadder things in life. It's sort of a lament. And one time, a friend and I went to a fado bar in Porto, a subterranean, fado bar with Moorish doorways and everything. And an older lady was singing. And before we asked instructions to the bar, and somebody said, we do our crying at home. She was from a different part of Portugal. So in a sense, it's sort of like a weeping, a lament, I would say, about the sadder things in life. And so I think this first track is a little, it is representative of most of the songs. But like I said, you wouldn't want a steady diet of it.
Well, neither of us is sure how to pronounce the Portuguese, mm-hmm. so I'll just give the English the title, Now It's Left Me. And then the first part of the text goes, yearning was always with me in the sound of my voice that in its most ancient of fados made 1,000 verses about us, sapping my will through mockery without even hearing my lamentations. Well, you'll get the idea quickly. The singer is Maritza here, and we're talking with Melissa Merle on Live and Local.
Através do som da minha voz chegou ao fim, já me deixou mesmo agora, saiu pela porta.
Yearning hurts less than love, but whilst you did not come, my suffering was so great, as I didn't know that you had as payback for my yearnings more yearnings than I. Arthur Ribeiro was the name of the writer of the text, and Maritza, the performer, a bit of fado singing here on FM 90.9. Melissa Murley brought that in as an offering today on Live and Local. Our show today is made possible in part with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, just Lincoln Square, a lifestyle center which includes unique and independently owned specialty shops, including So Sassy and Brownfield Sports. Jeff Esworthy has classical music for you coming up at 106. We've got a newscast at 101. I'll have the weather forecast for you right around 1 o'clock. And we have just a few minutes left with Melissa Murley, who's an arts and entertainment writer for the News Gazette for about 10 years now. She's been with the News Gazette for
19 years.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the arts beat is where you're going to stay?
I hope so. Probably, yeah.
So you've made your various transformations.
My niche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you found it there. Mm-hmm. Well, it's great to have found a niche, and I appreciate your coming in on the show today. Who are you interviewing today? Anybody?
No, not today.
Who's your next exciting interview? What are you most looking forward to coming up?
Well, I have to write a couple stories. I have to write the one on the Gunn family, and then one on Deborah Joy Hart, an RN who uses humor, who has gone through a certified laughter leading course, and she does volunteer work at the Time Shelter. And
now, how did you find out about that one?
How did I find out about that? Oh, I got an email from Bees and Botanical in Urbana, and they have classes every so often on New Age type things. And Deborah Joy Hart was leading one on how to read auras. And Becky, the features editor, saw that and she said, "You ought to do a story on this woman." So I went to the class and then I interviewed her after like a few days later in person, you know, outside a coffee shop.
So your job has some fun elements to it.
And it's a lot of fun.
You can quite legitimately go out for coffee, and mm-hmm. That's definitely part of your job.
And have that dinner the other night at the big neighborhood supper.
Yeah, have the dinner and then go to a class like that. I imagine you have kind of an unstructured day.
For the most part, they like for me to get in around 9, and I leave around 5. And then sometimes, like, I will leave early if I have to cover an event in an evening. And most of the things I cover are things I would enjoy going to anyway. And here I get paid for doing it.
Yeah, not a bad gig.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for inviting me.
And maybe we'll do it again.
Okay.
Since we're always uncovering... always uncovering new entertainment to mm-hmm. share with people. And you have brought along as what we're going to, well, we be our last selections today. Selection today, music by Chet Baker. What interests you about him?
Jazz. I like his intimate and relaxed style of singing. I think the U of I faculty, they're going to be playing some cool Western jazz, West Coast jazz at their Allerton Barn Festival. I don't know if Chet Baker music is among it, but it might be. So anyway, I just liked his voice. I've picked up this album CD somewhere. And
you like Gershwin's music, because one of the pieces we're not going to get to was a Gershwin tune.
Lullaby.
Yeah,
I really like the way it starts out. It gets a little schmaltzy in the middle, but I think it's really beautiful.
Embraceable You?
No, Lullaby does, yeah.
Well, we're hearing Embraceable You with Chet Baker. Vocal and trumpet, David Wheat is the guitarist, Ross Savakis, not sure if I'm saying his name right, the bassist, from a disc called Chet Baker Sings and Plays, Embraceable You. Melissa Murley's been my guest on Live and Local today. I'm Kevin Kelly.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me.